Hello, this is Chris with the Champaign News Gazette for Monday, February 24th. We'll begin today's reading on the front page. Executive order? Confusion reigns now. Klopel says it's past time to clear things up. From Urbana. More than a year after Champaign County voters elected their first county executive, disagreement continues over the extent of the executive's authority. The most public dispute has centered on whether it's the county executive or the county board chairman who has the power to choose and nominate successors to elected offices that become vacant in between elections. County Executive Darlene Klopel said she didn't object when County Board Chairman Geraldo Rosales chose two new appointees to the county board to fill vacancies in the past 5 months, with both his choices approved by the board. She did, however, raise objections to Rosales' taking charge of choosing a replacement for former County Treasurer Laurel Pressing, who resigned effective January 31st. "I thought I'd better not let it go too much longer," she said. Klopel said she offered to choose the new nominee for treasurer jointly with Rosales, but the offer was declined. Because a new treasurer must be appointed within 60 days of Prussing's resignation, Klopel said she won't hold up that process and Rosales will make that appointment, but she wants to get this issue clarified for the future. Klopel said the purpose of adding an executive branch of government is to have checks and balances, and she believes voters approved an elected county executive form of government because they wanted a change, though it may have been unclear to some exactly what the county executive's job would involve. "I'm the executive, so I'm the one who has to pursue it." Champaign County voters very narrowly approved a switch to the executive form of county government in 2016. And Klopel was elected Champaign County's first county executive in November 2018. Since that time, there's been confusion. For example, there's a belief that the county board gets to set the agenda for the board meetings, but it should be the county executive. In counties with a county executive form of government, state law defines a county board as the governing body and the county executive as the chief officer who administers this form of government. Among the listed powers and duties of the county executive are presiding over county board meetings, preparing the annual county budget, the power to veto ordinances passed by the board, and appointing people to serve on various boards, commissions, and special districts with the advice and consent of the county board. Not specifically listed under the law is a county executive power is choosing replacements for other elected county offices that fall vacant between elections. Barbara Mann, chief of the Civil Division for the County State's Attorney's Office, said the mechanism for filling the vacancy in the Treasurer's Office is in the State Election Code, which says the County Board Chair makes the appointment with the advice and consent of the Board. While there's no court guidance on this issue, it does seem that state statute gives the County Executive power to make certain appointments and not others. Rosales said a meeting between him, Klopel, and State's Attorney Julia Reitz settled the dispute over making the treasurer appointment. Reitz was clear that the appointment is his to make, and he told Klopel he could only follow the recommendation and advice of the state's attorney. "Both parties are in agreement that I make the appointments, except Darlene." Klopel said she disagrees with Reitz's opinion on this issue, and she's consulted her own attorney. "The legal question is whether the county executive's authority is limited to exactly what's specified in the county executive statute, or whether the split between executive and legislative functions under the county executive form of government supersedes other references throughout state statutes to certain functions of a county board chairman as the chief elected officer of a county." Klopel said she's prepared to take the issue of appointment-making authority to court, if necessary. For now, she's waiting to see what Attorney General Kwame Raoul has to say in response to a request for an opinion on county executive powers and duties from Will County, which also has an elected county executive. In a February 13th letter to Raoul, Will County State's Attorney James Glasgow asked for a formal Attorney General's opinion on the powers and duties of an elected county executive, specifically Does the office of county board chairman exist under the county executive form of government? And under this form of government, is the county executive the chair of the county board, pursuant to the election code requirement that the board chairman make appointments to fill vacancies of other county offices with the advice and consent of the county board? May the county board usurp the executive function of making an appointment to a vacant position through the creation of a county board chairman position not authorized by statute in a county executive form of government? Under the county executive statute, the county board performs a legislative function, and there is no office of county board chairman that is created under that. A legislative body confirms, it doesn't appoint. We want to put this to bed. Should this issue end up in court in Champaign County, Will County will likely seek to intervene. Once there is a case on it, it could affect the way we want to run the government in our county. Rosales says he'll be interviewing the top applicant soon to fill the treasurer vacancy, and he plans to bring his choice to the board at its meeting in March to be confirmed. The next treasurer will serve until voters elect a new treasurer November 3rd to fill the remaining years of Prussing's term. Meanwhile, a new initiative formed last month called Reform Champaign County has collected about 200 signatures on a petition seeking to place a question on the November ballot, asking voters whether they want to continue the county executive form of government, according to one of the group founders, John Bambadek. About 4,000 signatures would be needed by August, and efforts to obtain more signatures will be kicked up after the March 17th primary election. County Board member Charles Young, also involved in this effort, said he was always against the change to a county executive form of government, and he continues to see it as an unnecessary taxpayer expense. Klopel wants the board to rubber stamp everything. I know she's learning, but I think she's also somewhat stubborn. Young has been involved in his own dispute with Klopel. As the board's policy, personnel, and appointments chairman, Young has sought to be included in the interview process for various openings on appointed boards and commissions, he said, and she said no. An article by Tom Kasich, Prison Reform, a Cause Near and Dear to Ex-Illinois Governors. Almost as predictable as the inmate who finds Jesus is the former incarcerated governor from Illinois who discovers the need for prison reform. Sad to say, the need remains even, though it's been around longer than there have been jailbird ex-governors. Otto Kerner, who was governor in the 1960s and later a federal judge, served 7 months in prison on a conviction related to discounted racetrack stock he got in exchange for providing favorable racing dates. Prison was dehumanizing, Kerner said, with too many heartless administrators and jailers. Too many correctional officers are psychotic, sadistic persons who enjoy stepping on others, he said shortly after his release from prison when he began counseling inmates. He soon died of lung cancer. The late Dan Walker, who served a single term as governor in the 1970s, talked of the depression he experienced as an inmate and how he considered suicide. After his release, Walker moved to San Diego and worked at St. Vincent de Paul Village, providing housing, meals, and job training for the homeless. He said he found job prospects for a felon and helped raise funds for the village. George Ryan, who was governor from 1999 to 2003, had some credentials in the criminal justice area before he went to prison, having pushed to end the death penalty in Illinois. After serving more than 5 years in prison, he spoke out about the despair and stigma attached to former inmates. Justice is supposed to be blind, but the fact is most people are blind about the justice system. Those of us who have been there and are coming out of prison wondering what is going on, there are people concerned about what is going to happen to us, but I'm not sure they care that much. Ryan said he wanted ex-prisoners to be able to remove that tag, felon, for the rest of their lives. Now, with newly released Rob Blagojevich, who not only was convicted by a federal jury, but also was impeached by the legislature, is reiterating that he thinks the criminal justice system needs attention. Predictably, he said the government's case against him was persecution, masquerading as prosecution. Even though there is an impressive accumulation of recordings of him and allies scheming to cash in on his position as governor. "You can't always rely on the courts," Blago told a TV interviewer, then referenced the notorious Dred Scott case of 1857, in which the U.S. Supreme Court ruled that blacks, whose ancestors were brought to the U.S. and sold as slaves, could not be citizens. "So they don't always get it right," he said. To be clear, Blagojevich has been talking about prison reform for, well, as long as he was in prison. "Instead of creating a system that punishes and dehumanizes inmates, let's create a system that rehabilitates prisoners and prepares them for life outside of prison," he wrote in a 2018 op-ed piece. "So here is my message. We can never reach our potential until we as a people rise up and demand that our elected representatives bring about reform, until freedom is safeguarded by a renewed and unwavering commitment to the rule of law, until mercy seasons justice and fair play governs those who govern us. I'll be happy to be proven wrong, but I doubt this commitment to helping anyone but Rob Blagojevich. As governor, he did nothing to improve prison conditions or reform the criminal justice system. Instead, everything he did as governor, whether it was boosting state spending instead of meeting pension obligations, moving the state budget into the red to pay for his kids' care program, or giving free mass transit rides to seniors, was designed to burnish the image of Rob Blagojevich. I effin' busted my ass and pissed people off and gave your grandmother a free effin' ride on a bus, okay? I gave your effin' baby a chance to have health care," Blago said on a secretly recorded tape played at his trial. "Only 13% of you think I'm doing a good job, so F you all." That was the real Rob Blagojevich. Maybe almost 8 years in prison has changed him, but I doubt it. A perspective-changing event. Humbled, grateful, to God be the glory. Those are the words used by CU at Home's Executive Director Rob Dollhouse when describing the support received through One Winter Night 2020, the ministry's annual community awareness event and major fundraiser. For the past 9 years, CU at Home has relied on the community to fully support the vital homeless services they provide and has relied on their One Winter Night event to bring in roughly two-thirds of the ministry's annual budget. One Winter Night 2020, held on February 7th, was no exception, and due to the added services CU at Home will look to provide by the end of the year, a year-round men's and women's shelters, the fundraising goal was set higher than ever at $350,000. CU at Home was blessed to have 300 box dwellers sign up to participate, along with another 150-plus volunteers. That Friday evening was truly a magical night. Participants got to hear from some powerful speakers sharing about homelessness and what is being done in our community to provide for those in need. Those in attendance were also treated to some amazing musical performances as different musicians blessed the crowd with uplifting gospel music as well as some thought-provoking original pieces. "I had so many box dwellers come up to me and share that they could feel the presence of God in the Orpheum Theater during the musical performances. Truly a perspective-changing and God-honoring evening. With the snow falling at a rapid rate, the atmosphere was high energy and intense. We hadn't had a snow like that at One Winter's Night since I've been a part of the ministry," Dollhouse said. "I had several box dwellers tell me about their boxes collapsing under the weight of the snow. This is just another example of a trial that someone on the street may have to endure. And it gave those participating a real-life example of why emergency shelter services are so critical. Without those services, our friends could end up on the streets battling not only the cold weather, but also the snow and ice that could accompany those frigid temps. Walking out of the event that Saturday morning, there was a feeling of immeasurable gratitude. To everyone who participated, volunteered, donated, and everyone who was involved in some way, thank you. We truly could not do what we do without the community's support, and we are grateful for the opportunity to serve now and long into the future. One Winter Night 2021, the ministry's 10th annual event, will take place on February 5th, 2021. And from the local page, they're setting the stage, participants pumped to put on Mamma Mia, first show in school's renovated theater from Monticello. The Monticello High School musical presentation of Mamma Mia will feature a lively celebration of the 1970s and 80s music of Swedish pop supergroup ABBA. But for student actors and directors, it's also a celebration of being back on their home stage after a long year away. And what a stage it is! A $900,000 renovation that will be complete by March 5th through 8th show dates includes a doubling of the stage depth, making it possible to get all actors on the stage at once when needed. It's super exciting. Oh my goodness, gushes Monticello Jr. and 3-year thespian participant Ashley Long, who is the spring musical's choreographer in addition to being in the cast. Whenever I'm doing the blocking for the choreography, it's really fun to have different places to put people and be able to utilize the space more than we have been doing. It's been a really great change. It also means scenes of 42 cast members being on stage at the same time for this year's spring musical. That was not possible in the past on the smaller 1923-built platform. For stage manager Nick Timmons, the renovation is like being a kid in a candy store, or even like Christmas, since new, last-minute items are being installed nearly every day. Last night we came in here and the curtains and half the lights were up. Then we came in today and the rest of the lights were up. So every day there is a new surprise. Audience members will notice changes as soon as they walk in, with theater-style seating and a balcony being added, increasing the capacity to about 450. The permanent seating has also allowed for online ticket sales for the first time. No more waiting in line to get a good seat, said director Nikki Graham, who sings praises about the improvements with as much gusto as her student actors. We have more seating with a balcony and the best view in the house, in my opinion. The stage size has doubled, so we have room to build a real set rather than just a row of flats along the back. We now have wing space on both sides that we never had before. There will be updated lighting and sound systems that will really enhance the viewing experience for our audience. Did I mention the balcony? The director said with a chuckle. The work is part of a $35 million upgrade to the high school and adjacent Washington Elementary. The auditorium, which sits right in the middle of the original high school building, quickly became one of the centerpieces of a project that also includes a new gym, science wing, and elementary school classroom addition. A theme of the overall project is blending the old with the new. This can be seen in several places throughout the overhaul upgrade, said Monticello Superintendent Vic Zimmerman. Specific to the auditorium, we kept the stage proscenium and the purple gold shields above the stage. The school district created a similar blend about 20 years ago when an outside area between the high school gyms was enclosed into a cafeteria and commons. During the work, the previously outdoor circular stairs and leading into more gym and outside wall were left for all to see in the new inside space. Thespians were able to start rehearsing in the renovated auditorium in mid-February, and although there are still little pieces left to be completed, most notably formal light and sound training, Graham is giving it rave reviews. We are able to fit so many more actors on stage and actually have a real set to work with. In my opinion, the audience will enjoy the improvements due to better quality sound, lighting, and seating. This will be a wonderful experience for anyone who comes out to see the show. Also on the local page, getting personal. Poetry has always been a passion for Arianna Mizan, which was reinforced with her recitation of Jean Valentine's Sanctuary and Emily Dickinson's It Was Not Death, I Stood Up at this year's Poetry Out Loud National Recitation Contest Regional. Mizan claimed the Eastern Illinois Regional title, earning a spot at the state contest set for March 2nd in Springfield. The University Laboratory High School sophomore opened up to staff writer about poetry, school, and how she likes to wind down. Why did you want to participate in Poetry Out Loud, and how did you decide which poems to recite? Although I love writing and reading poetry and prose, I never considered reciting poems aloud. I entered Poetry Out Loud for the first time as a freshman on a whim and realized I absolutely enjoyed reciting and hearing others' recitations and interpretations. When I recite a poem, I get lost in the words and their meanings. When deciding my selected poems, I depend on my instinct. I figured I would just know when I found the right poems. Contestants can only choose poems from the official Poetry Out Loud website. Even if a poem was the most beautiful piece of writing when looked at on a page or screen, if I couldn't feel the words when I read them out loud, I didn't select that poem. I decided to recite Sanctuary by Jean Valentine because it's a powerful poem that allows a lot of room to play around with voice inflections and word articulation. I decided to recite It Was Not Death for I Stood Up because Emily Dickinson's poetry is peculiar in structure and theme. With this poem, I really worked on tempering my voice and speaking with intention and meaning, not just reciting or giving a dramatic performance. Do you have any post-high school plans yet? I plan to continue my education. I know that with whatever career path I choose, I will always keep poetry and writing in my life. I will keep my options open since I'm a sophomore. I still have time to explore different interests before making an ultimate decision. What's your favorite class or subject and why? Of course, my favorite subject is English, and I've openly accepted the fact that I'm an English nerd. At my school, English provides an open space for critical thinking and discussion, and the people in my class make discussions even better. However, this year I also really love history, because we don't just learn random facts, we learn about the chronological flow and impact of historical events, which can be applied to today. How do you like to spend your weekends? Truthfully, my favorite thing to do on the weekend is catch up with my family. I love spending time with my siblings. I like to play basketball, ride my bike with my brother, go on walks with my best friend, and read and play with my younger sister. On Saturday evenings, we have family movie night, and some family favorites include shark and zombie apocalypse movies. Finally, which one of your teachers has had the greatest impact on your education so far? I appreciate every teacher who has helped guide my education in some way or another. There are some teachers who really understand students and whose influence can transcend the classroom. For me, that teacher is Stephen Rayburn, my freshman English teacher. My class was his last before he retired, and we were lucky to have him as a teacher. He originally encouraged me to try out for Poetry Out Loud freshman year. He truly appreciated the imagination of each of his students, a unique and valuable quality. And from the sports page, shining star, Comets Jr. leaves his own mark from Champaign. Wrestlers are required to wear school apparel before they climb atop an IHSA individual state championship podium. Gage Reed recognized this Saturday evening as the Oakwood Jr. mulled about on the State Farm Center floor, waiting for Salt Fork freshman Reef Picott to be awarded the Class 1A 106-pound 6th place medal. So Reed eventually departed to fetch a Comets jacket bearing his last name, replacing the Simba t-shirt from The Lion King he'd worn throughout the tournament. Reed soon would step atop his own podium after all. Even so, that shirt wasn't appropriate attire for a second reason. Reed is no cub anymore. He's more like Simba's father, Mufasa, King of the Jungle. Reed used a third-period takedown of Unity sophomore Tavis Hosley to secure a 3-0 decision and win a 1A state title at 113 pounds, giving Reed the best possible follow-up to his fifth-place effort the year prior. "I love it. It's amazing," Reed said, after finishing his latest season with a 43-3 record. "This is everything I've worked for. I can't even say anything. I just can't stop smiling right now." Reed's win gave his team, in both Oakwood form and its current Oakwood Salt Fork cooperative version, its second-ever state champion. The previous honoree was 119-pounder Charles Lomax in 1974. I'm not even going to lie and sugarcoat it. It's a pretty cool feeling, man, Comets coach Mike Glosser said. He executed the game plan. He did everything we asked. It's a pretty neat experience for both of us, especially him. After scoreless first and second periods, Hosley opted to start the third period in neutral position. That granted Reed a point with 2 minutes left in regulation, but it also gave Reed another edge. I felt like he knew he couldn't ride me out, Reed said of being allowed out of bottom position. I'm glad he let me go neutral because he knew my offense was going to keep just going and going, and he knew my bottom work was either going to get an escape or a reversal. Hosley, the 1A-106 state runner-up as a freshman last year, never got out of first gear with an offense that generated a win by fall and 16 points during two decision victories earlier in the state meet. I was supposed to do what I've been doing the whole tournament, Hosley said, just going out and attacking, but I couldn't really get to do anything. Reed could. With 1 minute, 15 seconds left in regulation, Reed dragged Hosley downward, shoulders first, before slipping his left arm toward Hosley's right leg as the two hit the mat. I was attacking the head too much, and I left my legs open, Hosley said. It was a good reattack. Glosser wasn't so sure in the immediate aftermath. I kind of blacked out, so I probably need to see the video to see exactly what we even did right there. What Reed did was make school and team history, as well as forever enshrine himself in IHSA wrestling lore as a state champion, a legacy he can add to next year during his senior season. I was prepared for anything that came at me, and I was just ready to kill, Reed said, and I was ready for that title, and nobody was going to get in my way of it. Reed didn't know it while having his photo taken dozens of times atop that podium on the floor at State Farm Center, but he had one more reward awaiting him as well. A new shirt, bearing the likeness of Mafusa. Yeah, we got one in the car for him, Glosser said. He just couldn't wait to be king. And from Rantoul, lengthy transition intentional. Despite a change in leadership, a change in the way things are run in the Rantoul City School District is not likely. Scott Woods, who is currently the J.W. Eater principal, said that when he takes over as superintendent January 1st, 2022, he intends to run things like his predecessor, Michelle Rampage. I don't believe there is anything out there that needs drastically changed as they stand right now. Woods was announced as Rampage's successor last week. Rampage, who took over as interim superintendent in 2011 while also serving as Thomasboro Grade School superintendent, and got the RCS job on a full-time basis in 2013. A similar plan was announced in September at Parklet College, where her husband Tom is president. Said Michelle Rampage, "We thought it would be great to go out together." We'll take a short break now and return with the second half hour of the Champaign News Gazette for Monday, February 24th. Please stay tuned.